let him explain what he does. I'm looking forward to hearing what he has to say. Welcome, Harley.
Yes, I should make a full disclaimer. Many of you probably don't know who I am, but many of the older ones know who I am, so I don't need to say a lot about that. But I have been living and working in Russia for the last 17 years with the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. This is an organization that attempts to unite and provide guidance to the institutions of higher learning in the United States and Canada who are committed to a Christian worldview. These are mostly evangelical universities. And as part of their service to the Christian community, they provide study abroad opportunities. I have been working with the council in what is called a Russian studies program. American and Canadian students come to Russia for a semester to learn about Russia. So I have directed that program, and consequently, Russia is an important part of my life. I have been blessed not only to work with the council, for which I have great fondness, but also I worked with a mission board prior to that in Eastern Europe and the Soviet Union. So this part of the world is an important part of my life. I would like to talk briefly about two things before I speak specifically about the church in Russia. I was told that I should speak about mission issues in Russia. And so I would like to talk a little bit about culture and a little bit about mission as a way of introducing the subject of Russia. Now, culture is a very significant part of any people. Culture is the way a people think, the worldview a people have, how people perceive truth, how people perceive themselves, the world around them, and the supernatural. Culture is a very significant part of any people group, and usually we don't think a lot about it, partly because it is so much an integral part of who we are. So I would like to look a little bit at culture, and I'm going to talk about American culture, because we live in America. And I have spent much of my life thinking about issues of culture and how the church, how Christ can be communicated across cultures. Because usually when we think of the missionary movement, we think about cross-cultural communication. That is communication about Christ from one culture to another culture. So I want us to think a little bit about culture, who we are as Americans. And as I list these items, and I went to the trouble of being a good American, I'm going to list them numerically so that you can actually follow what I'm saying. And if you do fall asleep, then I hope at the end we can have someone with bells and whistles to give us some life before the closing. Culture, as I have defined it in America, is something that we discuss a lot in Russia. When I told my Russian friends that I was going to be asked to speak at a church on Wednesday evening, they said, oh, we have some good ideas for you. And so we discussed this. In fact, the last Sunday evening I was in Russia, every Sunday evening we have a group of young people who meets in my apartment. We stayed up till 2 o'clock in the morning. They gave me some ideas, And what I am sharing with you is in part a fruit of those discussions. I would submit that there are at least 14 values, 14 qualities that characterize American culture. And so here we go. The first one is the strong belief that we personally can shape the environment around us. We personally are important in the world. We can make the world better. And you say, well, doesn't everyone think that way? No, they don't. There are many cultures in the world that don't think that way. And as I mentioned before, I want to list these things, and at the end, I hope you can consider to what degree, really, we are part of American culture. So when we go as missionaries to another country, we are going to be taking part of that American culture with us. So, point number one, the ability to personally shape our environment. There is another way of looking at the world, and that is the way most Russians look at the world. The concept of fate. We can't really change things because they, whoever they are, in Russia they use that word all the time, they, они, they do that. They up there in the Kremlin, they, the people in the Duma, they make all the decisions and we suffer. Americans view the world differently. We believe that we personally can make a difference. We don't like the concept of fate. In Russian, there are four words for fate. We in English, basically, we talk about fate. In Russia, they love it so much they have four different words for it. And poets and novelists make maximum use of that term, fate. Number two, Americans believe in change. We believe that change is good, and it is almost synonymous with progress. We make changes, and remember, we have the power to make changes, to make the world better. We have progress. Russians view the world much differently. They view the world in terms of tradition. Tradition is important. The way we used to do things, that is better. And that was part of the cause that communism, the ideology of Marxism, never caught on in Russia. It was imposed by force on the Russian people. They believe in tradition. Let's do things the way they were done centuries ago. Number three, the concept of time is important for Americans. We are a very time-oriented society. In our vocabulary, we have many proverbs, many verbs that are related to the concept of time. We waste time, we spend time, we make time, we save time. And whenever there is an important transition in society, we think about time. About 60, 70 years ago in this community, there was an important transition. Change was made. Remember, we like change. And there was a very heated discussion about this machine which controls us. The wristwatch. It is such an important symbol of our lives that it even becomes a theological issue. Time is important for us. In Russia, time is not that important. You can be 10 minutes late for an appointment. Nobody cares. What is important is relationships. They are far more important than time. You can spend hours visiting with someone over tea. That's far more important than meeting an appointment. Which is time-oriented. Number four, the concept of equality and egalitarianism. We in America believe that everyone is equal. We are created equal. And this concept grows out of the Renaissance, the Aristotelian concept that man is the center of the universe, which is what the Renaissance was all about. Renaissance simply means a rebirth of an old philosophy, and in this case, it was Greek philosophy, that man is the center of the universe. Man is important, and all people are equal. And, of course, the Reformation was a continuation of that very same philosophy. We are all equal. No priest, no church authority has the right to tell us what to do. We are all equal. We can read the Bible and decide for ourselves what the Bible says. That was what the Reformation was about. And that is part of the American notion of equality. Russians view things differently. Russians respect authority to a fault. It gets them into trouble. It's why they have such lousy governments, because they respect authority. Number four, individualism. And that is related to the point number four. Individualism and privacy as opposed to collective thinking. We value our individualism in America. And as I talk to the Russians about American missionaries that they have met, invariably, they talk about how individualistic they are, how individualistic is their orientation towards the church. We can do what we want because we are missionaries. We have our own little set of priorities. In Russia, you think collectively. You think what the other people around you do. Individual rights are less important in Russia than our collective rights. When you act, you behave in a way that promotes the welfare of the whole society, not yourself. In America, we talk about human rights as my individual, my private human rights. In many parts of the world, and especially in Russia, the case is different. The rights we protect are the rights of the community. The rights of the collective take priority over the rights of the individual. Connected with that is a sixth point, and that is concept of self-help. We as Americans believe that we can do everything. The American dream. We can lift ourselves up by our bootstraps and even become president of the United States. Anyone can do that. We believe that since we are all equal, all we need to do is work hard and we can achieve great success. Russians think differently. And by the way, many other societies think differently. If you look through any American dictionary, you will find 100 words beginning with the word self. Self-control, self-esteem, self-confidence, self-establishment, self-this, self-that. We can do it. It's very American. Point number 7 is related to that, and that is competition and free enterprise. We believe that competition is the heart of the free enterprise system. If you can build a better mousetrap than your neighbor, you will do better than he will. In Russia, the priority here is cooperation. Don't try to compete with others. Help them. I work in academia. I work in schools. And in America, even in schools, in elementary schools, in university, there is competition. If you make better grades, if you write better papers than your competitors, you will be honored. You will be put at the head of your class. You will be valedictorian. In Russia, they view things totally differently. And I know some people who are in elementary school, and I work with Russian students too. They engage in what we in America call cheating. Cheating. For them, it's just helping each other. I mean, what do you mean? We can't copy off this person? Well, we're just helping. No, you're not going to copy in my class. Well, you're an American. In Russia, they believe in helping each other, even in schoolroom classes. Number 8, Americans have a future orientation. We believe the future will be better. We can do it. We do not care much about the past. We don't know a lot about history. Several years ago, the New York Times did a survey, and they found that over 50% of Americans did not know that the United States and the Soviet Union were allies during World War II. We don't care about history. We care about the future. We go trotting all over the world, imposing our will on the peoples there because we know what is best for the future. Many people view the situation differently. They say we need to cherish the past. The past is just as important as the future. As Mikhail Gorbachev famously said, during the years of perestroika, when he was asked how things would turn out, he said, well, you know, we are not quite sure how the French Revolution turned out because it hasn't been a long enough period to determine the outcome. Number 9, we are very action-oriented and work-oriented. We are workaholics. We value people by the work they do and the success they have. And I happen to believe this is one of the great challenges for Anabaptist theology, because Anabaptism has not adequately addressed the whole issue of work and activity, in my opinion, as opposed to being. In Russia, they value you for who you are, not for what you do. Number 10, informality. Americans like to dress and behave informally. It's in part a product of our history. We have been liberated from the strictures of continental formality, dressing up. You can go to Carnegie Hall or to an opera in Washington and find people wearing jeans and T-shirts. Not in Russia. You dress up. You are formal. And this all has to do with how we view people and how we view society. Number 11, Americans value directness, openness, and honesty in relationships. In Russia, this is often called bluntness. Americans are too blunt and even uncouth because we say directly in people's faces what we think. In Russia, it is much more important to save face, to treat people in such a way that even if they make mistakes, that they don't feel humiliated, that they can save face. Number 12, Americans are very practical. Americans emphasize efficiency. No country in the world has more inventions patented than the United States. We are a practical people. If there is a problem, let's go solve the problem. You think, well, that's just the way people act. No, it isn't. A lot of people don't act that way. And I can assure you in Russia, many people don't act that way. Believe you me, when a toilet doesn't flush, I want someone who can make that thing work. And it takes some doing in Russia sometimes to find that. Our approach as Americans is, will the work that I do, will it pay? Will it be of practical value? America has no philosophy. We have never had any great philosophers. If there is any philosophy that is American, it's probably pragmatism. Making sure that things work. If they work, then they must be good. If they don't work, they're bad. Number 13, materialism. We in America are enormously blessed. We are rich. We have lots of material goods. And very often, we worship these material goods. We can go all over the world because we have money, material wealth that enables us to do that. And I made very sure that my American students who come to Russia do not take a haughty view simply because they are wealthy. They are rich. We don't go to other countries and give out candy to the poor beggar children. My approach is we should go to other countries to learn from the richness that they have to offer us. And number 14, the American dream is happiness. No, it's guaranteed by the Constitution. We have a right to pursue happiness. We smile. You take a picture, smile. In Russia, it's just the opposite. A camera appears, you look sober, look serious. Picture is being taken. After the picture is taken, then you can smile again. This, too, is a product of our history. We have been so blessed. We do not know what suffering is in this country. And that's why very often we try vicariously to engage in suffering, to go to some poor country and see if we can't experience a little bit of suffering, to assuage our sense of guilt that we are not suffering. Russians value and sometimes even worship the notion of suffering, hardship, difficulty. Russia has a 1,000-year history. For 500 of those 1,000 years, Russia has been occupied by a foreign power. Don't you think that elicits a sense of suffering? The United States has never been occupied by a foreign country. We don't know what it means. Theologically, there are also similarities. In America, we tend to emphasize the happiness, the joy of being a Christian. Smile, you're a Christian. God loves you. In Russia, remember, Jesus Christ suffered. And because he suffered, we need to identify with that suffering. And they have something to teach us, in my opinion. So that has been a rather lengthy discourse on American culture. And I would appeal to you to think about how many of these elements are present in how you express your Christianity. And if you were to go to another culture which would not share some of these values, how would you feel? To what degree would you become acculturated to that culture? I think it's useful also to think about these ideas, even in America, because we use the term acculturation to describe the process whereby a subgroup becomes more like the mother culture. It's just a fancy term for saying that we become more like the people around us. That is called acculturation. Now a few words about missions, because we are talking about mission work tonight. Missionary work, as we understand it, has a very, very short history. The modern missionary movement is only about 150 years old. Back in the mid-19th century, when churches started realizing we need to send out missionaries to the lost peoples of the world. And out of that movement, we have today, in almost every denomination, organizations devoted to foreign missionary work. And we have in academics a discipline called missiology, the study of how we can be missionaries in a foreign culture. To what degree should we adapt to the local culture? To what degree are there certain basic fundamental truths that cannot be compromised? That is what the missionary movement is about. Now, I would contend that in the Anabaptist tradition, one of the most significant elements of that movement back in the 16th century was its fanatical missionary work that has not been dealt with by Anabaptist historians. They tend to focus on the ethical implications of Anabaptism rather than the missiological emphases. I believe this is going to be the new direction that Anabaptist studies will take in the next generation or so. But the Anabaptists, they got themselves killed and burned at the stake and drowned, not because they were nice, not because they were out trying to be like everyone else. They got it because they were out preaching something that other people didn't like. That's missionary work. So we have the whole question of how do we adapt to another culture when we want to present the gospel of Christ cross-culturally? That is, to another culture, which may have 14 values that are different from the 14 values that we have just discussed. Like, for example, future orientation. We Americans like to think about the future. In a Muslim culture, you do not think about the future. In fact, it is considered almost dangerous, sinful, because the future is in the hands of Allah. Why should we try to plan the future? Allah plans the future. And there are many other aspects of a host culture that we need to consider when we go to other cultures to present the gospel. So those are the two big issues, missions and culture. Now, what about Russia? A little bit of history of the church in Russia. Russia is primarily an Eastern Orthodox country. 82% of the population consider themselves to be Russian Orthodox, members of the Russian Orthodox Christian Church. I cannot go into great detail about what that means, but I would urge you to pursue via internet or get some good books on the study of Orthodoxy. It is a remarkable branch of Christianity which we in America know very little about, unfortunately. But Russia became Christian in 988. That's 1,000 years ago. They accepted the Eastern version of Christianity. Although the church at that point was still one Christian church worldwide, culturally, at that point in the 10th century, there was the Eastern Church and the Western Church. And they eventually split into Eastern Orthodoxy and Roman Catholicism. So Russia accepted the Eastern version of Christianity, and most people proclaim that faith. Now, what about Protestantism in Russia? Well, here this story is a little bit closer to us. Catherine the Great, in the 18th century, invited a number of Germans to come to Russia. Catherine the Great was the Tsarina, the queen of Russia, if you will. She herself was German. She wasn't even Russian. She was German. She liked the Germans. So she invited a group of Germans to come to Russia to settle the southern border of the Russian Empire, to act as buffers against the Turks and other people from Central Asia who tended to invade their country. And so among those Germans who came to Russia at the invitation of Catherine the Great were a large number of Mennonites. Most of them were Catholic and Lutheran, but there were also some Mennonites among them. A number of you, I'm sure, know about the history of Mennonites in Russia. It's a very special history, a chapter in Mennonite history. But in the 1860s, there was some movement, some dissension, some discussion in the Mennonite church in Russia. One of the big issues was, should we preach to the Russians, to the Slavs, to the Ukrainians, to the Belarus, to the Russians? Because remember, the Mennonites in Russia had their services in German. They were known as German Mennonites. They were not Russian. They did not mix with the Russians. If you married a Russian, you were no longer a Mennonite. And so, in the 1860s, there was discussion among the Mennonites, should we not be witnessing to the Slavic peoples around us? It's a long story, a very interesting chapter in Mennonite history, but out of this movement, there grew a number of people who were called Stundists. They met on Sunday afternoon after the regular church service in the Mennonite church, met for an hour. The German word is Stund. And they would meet for an hour to study the Bible and see how they can witness to these Slavs around them. Caused great problems in the church, and eventually this Stundist movement became Baptist. because some Baptists from northern Germany, from the seminary in Hamburg, came down to help these Mennonites. So they became Baptists then, and this is one of the most important sources of the Baptist church in Russia. They were dissident Mennonites who became Russian, who wanted to live among the Russians, have their services in Russian, and so forth. There were two other sources of the Baptist movement, the Protestant movement in Russia. One was in St. Petersburg by a person who worked in the British Embassy in St. Petersburg, a man by the name of Lord Radstock. He was a Derbyite who believed that the Russian people needed to hear the word of the gospel. He had Bible studies in his apartment, and it's very interesting. He created quite a splash in Petersburg because there were a lot of intellectuals there who wanted to discuss new ideas. To several of his Bible studies came a young, bearded man who seemed to be very dissatisfied. He was a seeker. His name was Fyodor Dostoevsky. He did not join this movement, but he went to those Bible studies, and it had an impact on his life. He wrote about it later, but he became a very devout Orthodox Christian later in life. So that's the second source of the Protestant movement. The third source was in Eastern Prussia, Eastern Poland, Western Belarus. There was a group of people associated with the Campbellite movement, the Restoration movement here, which gave rise to what we know today as the Church of Christ, the Disciples of Christ. And that movement was simply called the Evangelical movement. That was the name given to it, the Evangelicals. So those three groups then formed a unit during the communist era. All of these groups came together, and basically everyone was Baptist and Pentecostal. The Protestants in Russia constitute no more than 0.5% of the population. They are a very minute part of the population. As you know, from 1917 to 1991, Russia was a communist state led by a philosophy, an ideology, which was known as Marxism, which was rabidly anti-religious. But, in my opinion, they were never very successful. Most Russians remained religious at heart. And that's something about which we can discuss. If you have questions, we may do that. I'd just like to close by giving you some suggestions that my Russian friends gave me that last Sunday night I was in Russia. So this is their message to you. They said, Western missionaries, before they come to Russia, should know the Russian people. Know who they are. Know their history. Know their culture. Know their language. Know their philosophy. Know what they think and what moves them. And I will say this, and I told them that I would speak straight. They know me as a straight talker, so they said, you say this. The common stereotype of Western missionaries in Russia is that they are stupid. And that is insulting to a people who value their culture, who value their great art and literature. We need to inform ourselves about the culture that we are targeting. And that means, secondly, and all of them said this, and they said, Harley, repeat this and repeat this. Pound your head on the pulpit. I don't like to stand behind pulpits because it separates you from the people, but here in this case, I'll pound the pulpit. Learn the language. Why can't we come to Russia and learn the language? Respect the people enough to learn the language they speak. If I were speaking here 70 years ago, I'd be speaking German. Why don't we speak German? We have made the choice to speak English. If we go to Russia, we need to make the choice to speak Russian. And it irritates to no end these young Russians that the American missionaries come there and don't speak the language. And believe you me, the Russian language is difficult. I have a person who is very close to me, let's put it that way. She just had her 15th birthday. She is in the 9th grade, and do you know what her most difficult subject is in school? In the 9th grade, Russian language. That is her most difficult subject in the 9th grade. In America, we don't even learn how to speak English correctly. And here, in the 9th grade, they are still wrestling with the difficulties of the Russian language. So, if we go to Russia as missionaries, let's learn the language. And believe you me, after 1991, when missionaries flooded in, they said, we don't have time to learn the Russian language. We've got to spread the gospel. And they have seen that that was a mistake. My approach to missionary work is what I call incarnational theology. That is, we go to live our faith. Live your faith in the classroom. If you are in academics, be excellent in academics. If you are a carpenter, be an excellent carpenter. If you are a farmer, be a very, very good farmer. If you're an electrician, be a good one. Whatever you do, do well. And when you go as a missionary to whatever country, and specifically in Russia, learn to do something well so that you can contribute to the welfare of the country. And the people learn to respect you. And then they start asking you questions. Why do you believe and behave the way you do? And then, once that connection, relationship has been made, then you can start speaking about things. Much more could be said, but let's see. Let's check this machine that controls us. We still have a few minutes. Are there any questions? Questions about Russia? Or... yes. Okay. That controversy which happened in the 1860s resulted in the creation of the Mennonite Brethren. That was where it started. Mennonite Brethren, as you know, practice baptism by immersion, which is also a characteristic of the Baptist movement. So, that controversy in the 1860s, that was the division between the what is called the Church Mennonites and the Mennonite Brethren.
Am I right that
is true. And they are correct. That is true. A lot of things could be said about that history. But yes. That is true. That is very true. The Mennonite Brethren, I believe, were the first Mennonites to engage in this missionary activity, which began as a broader movement in the evangelical church in the mid-19th century. Yes. Interesting question. What is the total impact of the Mennonite experience in Russia? In my opinion, that chapter is closed. There are very, very few Mennonites in Russia today. Paul Schrag wrote an editorial in Mennonite Weekly Review this week. In my opinion, his figures are way wrong. And we just had a meeting of Baptist historians about 2 months ago, and we talked extensively about this. To my knowledge, there is only one Mennonite congregation left in Russia. That is in a small village near Novosibirsk. It is led by a man named Friesen, and there's a lot of talk about supporting him, getting a bakery so that he can make money to support that Mennonite effort. But after hearing more extensive reports on that congregation, I think we, certainly I, would be embarrassed to be associated with that congregation. Bill Yoder, who is a journalist working in Moscow, has been trying to get people to contribute to maintain that church. And I told him, Bill, forget about it. That church is lost, and we should not waste our time and money on it. I could go into more personal details on the matter, but most of the ardent believers who were Mennonites either joined the Baptists or emigrated. After 1991, all the Mennonites emigrated to Germany because they were Germans. To be Mennonite is to be German. And the German government had to pay reparations for the war damages, which meant that any people with German connections could go to Germany, receive housing, jobs, social security, social benefits, and so forth. And so almost 100% of them have emigrated. Many also went to the United States. And by the way, there is a large, large population of Baptist and Pentecostal Russians in the United States now also, which is another subject entirely. Yes.
You mentioned the two things that the natives there said, learn the people and learn the language.
Yes.
What I'm hearing, I think, is in missions, you would find moving permanently rather than programs be the better way of transforming.
Yes. That is how I define incarnational theology. Go there, live among the people, and be a presence. Philippians 2. Yes.
You mentioned about language learning.
Yeah.
Would they have objection to an American missionary learning Russian over there?
No. No. Yeah. Learn the language there. This was a big mistake that the missionaries made in the early 1990s. No, when the Iron Curtain fell and suddenly missionaries could go in, Christianity had a big advertisement saying, take Jesus to Russia, as if he had never been there before. And many missionaries came in there. A good buddy of mine from another denomination started a language school to teach Russian to these missionaries who were coming in, and he had to close the school because none of the missionaries wanted to study Russian. They were too busy doing other things. And that wave has now passed. After 10 years of that kind of effort, most of the missionaries have now left Russia. You get to the verbs of motion and you decide that maybe God did not call you to learn Russian after all. So. Yes. Okay. Yeah. I'd be happy to. I think a careful analysis of Orthodox theology will leave you with a striking belief that this is the original church. This is the New Testament church in theology. However, I would say in terms of ethics, they have much to be desired. And this is also part of the discussion that we undergo when people gather on Sunday evening at my place. We have both Orthodox and Protestant. And I am humbled when I see the teaching of the Orthodox Church. I would strongly urge you to pick up any book by Callistos Ware, who used to be an Anglican priest. He's English, and so he understands how Westerners think. He has written several very, very good books on Orthodox theology. Or Don Clendenin, who is also an evangelical scholar who went to Russia and became deeply moved by Orthodoxy. Orthodox theology is not systematic in the sense that we as Westerners like to think systematically. It is very Eastern in its mentality. The great emphasis in Eastern Orthodoxy is worshiping God, and they know how to worship God. Go to an Orthodox service, and you will come away with an incredible sense of the awesomeness of God. There's a very good Orthodox church here in Wichita, St. George's. Visit it sometime. The singing, the beauty of the ceremony is unbelievable. You will be touched. And give that theology the chance to speak to you. The problem with evangelical theology is that there is no one theology. It's part of this American approach. We have dozens of different theologies. Seminaries trot out their own type of theology. And the Anabaptist movement is not bereft of this movement. We have over 600 different kinds of Anabaptists. So the Orthodox Church simply emphasizes that we must worship God in truth and in spirit. They do believe in the value of tradition, and for them, tradition is primarily here, but not totally. They also believe in the ecumenical councils, which are very important, and they do believe in the wisdom of the church. That is why their doctrines do not change from year to year or century to century, because the church decides what to believe and what not to believe. The Orthodox Church is in Russia the main voice against abortion. It is the lone voice speaking out against alcoholism and drug abuse. So I have a great deal of respect for the Orthodox Church, but I go to the Baptist Church. And I am a strong advocate of good relations between the Orthodox Church and Protestant churches. This has been perhaps one of my small contributions to the work of the church in Russia. Because, by the way, you know that the biggest problem with missionaries is what? Other missionaries. We can't get along. Because missionaries tend to be strong personalities. And so in Russia today, there are about, I would say at least 300 different groups coming in now, and they all promote their own style of Christianity. The Baptists in Russia have traditionally not been Calvinists, which is strange, because in America, most Baptists are Calvinist. So the Presbyterians come over there and preach Calvinism, and now the Calvinists are there, and they are saying, well, the Presbyterians are not sufficiently Calvinist. We want to have our own Calvinist denomination. And so there is endless internecine fighting that goes on in the missionary community. That needs to stop, in my opinion. There is only one church. There's only one Christ. In the Orthodox Church? Yes, they do. It is covenantal baptism. The parents covenant with the church that this child will be raised up in the church, in the teachings of the church. Methodists, Episcopalians, many other Protestant groups have infant, what we call pedobaptism. It's a different understanding of that notion. Well, I mentioned earlier about the possibility of people being asleep, so I don't want to have you snoozing soundly even as we close, so maybe you could come and close for us.
Well, thank you, Harley. That was very interesting. Let's rise for a closing prayer, and I'd like to ask Lowell Miller to lead the closing prayer.